The World Bank cuts its global growth forecast. It also slashed the Philippines' growth expectations this year, citing supply disruptions. Residents forced to evacuate due to the recent eruption of Mount Balusan allowed to return home. And we'll discuss government's approval of full capacity in establishments under COVID Alert Level 1 with health reform advocate Dr. Tony Lechon. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with news of a dimmer outlook for the global economy. The World Bank further slashing its global growth forecast for 2022. It now sees the global economy expanding 2.9%. That's down 1.2 percentage points from its January forecast of a 4.1% growth. It's also a sharp slowdown from the 5.7% growth in 2021. The World Bank says Russia's invasion of Ukraine has compounded the damage from the pandemic, pushing many countries into recession. It adds the war magnified the slowdown in the global economy, and it could enter a protracted period of feeble growth and elevated inflation. The World Bank now urges policymakers to coordinate aid for Ukraine, boost production of food and energy, and avoid export and import restrictions to reduce the risks. Well, the World Bank also slashed its growth forecast for the Philippines, citing supply chain disruptions. The Washington-based lender expects the Philippines to post a growth of 5.7% in 2022, a bit slower than its 5.9% forecast in January. For 2023 to 2024, the World Bank sees the Philippine economy growing 5.6%. The World Bank says the Philippine economy could be affected by shortages of essential commodities and inputs, which could then lead to disruptions in production and weak economic recovery. But it notes growth will be supported by sustained public investment and recovering household consumption. The Philippine economy grew stronger than expected in the first quarter of the year, expanding 8.3% amid the continued reopening of the economy from strict COVID lockdowns. The Trade Department vows to time price increases of basic commodities accordingly so as not to burden consumers too much. The agency is currently studying requests from at least three manufacturers, including bread makers, to raise the cost of their products.
The request is actually at 4 pesos, and what they say is to grant them the 2 pesos now and then 2 pesos maybe a month later under the administration of Secretary Pascual. But we're still reviewing it. This is only for Pinoy Tasty and Pinoy Pandesal. This is the special brand of bread that is made by the Phil Baking. It's an association of big bread manufacturers. We do not want businesses to fold. When they stop producing the products that we regulate, these are the products that are lowest priced and the most affordable in the market. The consumers will have no choice, will not have that choice anymore. That's why we're also helping the businesses.
As the prices of other staple goods go up, the Agrarian Reform Department meanwhile proposes a plan to bring down the price of rice to just 20 pesos per kilo as promised by President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr.
Kaya po ang tinignan natin is the traditional way nung kung paano natin pinuproduce yung palay ngayon, talaga hong napaka-imposible. Kung maiayos lang po siguro natin na tama, mamomodernize natin yung ating pagtatanim at gagamitan natin ng magagandang binhi, yung mga bagong teknolohiya, yun po ay talagang mapapababa natin yung cost of production.
A group of bus drivers commissioned by the government to give free rides decry the backlogs in their salary. The group says transport authorities did not deliver on their promised weekly payout. It questions the statement of Land Transportation Franchising and Regulatory Board Chairman Martin Delga when he said the funds for the program were already disbursed.
Yung iba pong mga kasamahan namin, siyempre po hindi naman po pwede na tumigil. Talaga pong may naghanap na dyan ng mga ikabubuhay para sa pamilya. At meron din po talaga na kung saan-saan na lumalapit at ang mabigat po, yung iba, yung mga nangungupahan, ay pinalalayas na po sa tirahan kasi hindi nga po makabayad.
U.S. experts recommend the use of COVID vaccine Novavax, a late runner in the fight against a virus that could play a role in overcoming vaccine hesitancy. Novavax is actually a front runner in the global vaccine race, but it fell behind after being hit by manufacturing and regulatory delays. Novavax's vaccine was found to be more than 90% effective against symptomatic cases of the disease, but its trial was conducted long before Omicron subvariants began circulating. So far, only three COVID vaccines have been granted approval in the U.S. These are Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. The Philippines detects three more cases of the more transmissible Omicron BA.5 subvariant. Two of the new cases are from Calabarzon. The location of the third one is still under verification. The health department says there is a high probability of local transmission, but more evidence is needed to confirm this.
Pag tinignan natin ang history nitong mga ating mga kaso, we can say no na wala tayong mga international sources for BA.5.
The agency also reported seven additional cases of the Omicron BA.2.12.1 subvariant, but the DOH believes the presence of highly transmissible Omicron subvariants is not directly related to the slight increase in the national COVID positivity rate.
Ang mga nasabing bahagyang pagtaas ng kaso ay kasalukuyang hindi pa nagka-translate sa pagtaas ng ating hospital admissions and utilization rates. Nananatili po ang ating national healthcare utilization rate sa low risk.
We were initially worried about BA4 and BA5 dahil mukhang nag-drive siya ng fifth wave dun sa South Africa. But actually, nag-peak yung fifth wave ng South Africa at maybe less than one-third of their original Omicron peak. So mukhang gumagana yung vaccines.
The Philippines further eases its COVID restrictions. Malacanang says establishments in areas under Alert Level 1 can now operate at 100% capacity. This amid the improving COVID situation in the country. Active COVID cases in the Philippines have gone down to 2,400 from February's 116,000.
The IATF recognizes the need to further identify the establishments and or activities which are allowed to operate or be undertaken in Alert Level 1. Kaugnay nito, pinayagan ng IATF ang full 100% capacity sa ilalim ng Alert Level 1. Ngunit kailangan magpakita ng katibayan ng full vaccination bago makasama sa malawakang pagtitipon-tipon o papasukin sa indoor establishments.
A group of medical workers wants President-elect Marcos to appoint a health chief who is pro-people. The Alliance of Health Workers also hopes the next head of the Department of Health has an excellent track record on good governance and has accountability and integrity. That call from the group comes as it expresses dismay over the allegedly anomalous pandemic supply deals between government and formerly pharmaceuticals. It believes the funding could have been better used to purchase medicines and provide benefits for healthcare workers. Well, as we mentioned, the Philippine government has now allowed full capacity in establishments located in areas that are under COVID Alert Level 1. That's despite the detection of more cases of Omicron subvariants in the country. Joining us now to discuss this is health reform advocate Dr. Tony Lechon. Dr. Lechon, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina. And I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to add value to the discussion.
Always nice to have you on board. First off, I want to talk about your concerns about the restrictions being lifted, at least in areas under Alert Level 1.
Well, I fully agree, Carmina. In terms of the 100% full capacity in close area, given the last 4 to 5 months that we have low cases, of course, there are metrics that we are considering. The positivity rate is way below the 5%. It's around 1.2%. Though the reproduction number for the NCR is above 1, is 1.25 according to the OCTA and the Department of Health. I think with the latest data that we have right now, the healthcare utilization is actually decreases around 17%. The positivity rate is low at 1.2%. The number of deaths are basically for the last few days at zero. Mm-hmm. I think these are metrics that we need to consider. The only thing, my reservation is only with regard to the definition of full vaccination.
Right.
Because we know that in other countries, the definition of full vaccination is actually three doses, two primary vaccines and a first dose or the first booster. And based on the IATF report, we have only 70% in term. We have 70 million for the completion of the primary vaccine, but only a dismal 15%.
Correct.
For the booster shot.
In fact, that's what I wanted to talk to you about today, more specifically, Dr. Lechon, because if you only require full vaccination, what happens then to the waning immunity and what happens then to the booster drive? Do you think that this may also affect the booster drive negatively, since the only thing that government or these establishments will be asking for is the proof of full vaccination?
That's correct, Carmina. I think it's a work in progress because we cannot really restrict them after this particular resolution. The only way is to make them resilient and protected, and basically that's wearing face masks and then adherence to the minimum public health standards. But one thing that is good is the even during the campaign period, the number of cases right now has really gone down. Mm-hmm. And we know that with the arrival of the variants and the waning immunity, that may be a problem in the long run. So I would like to support this so that we can speed up the economy. But this is a work in progress that we need to ramp up on our booster program so that we will solve two problems. The first one is really to make us a resilient country that we can actually stand any variants that will come our way, because this is the way to go. And number two is to inform the public that the primary vaccination, the complete definition of vaccination is actually three doses, so that we can actually prevent the wastage of the vaccine, knowing that we need to complete the third dose so that we can actually catch up with the primary vaccine. Mm-hmm. I think we will have an expired vaccine to the tune of around 90 million by July. That's according to Presidential Advisor Joey Concepcion. Of course, the government. So we need really to have an inventory of the vaccines, on the expiring vaccine, those who are active ones, so that we can have a full perspective of the whole situation.
You know, throughout this pandemic, Dr. Lechon, you and I have had many conversations, and the goal really is to eventually be able to live with the virus. With the metrics that you mentioned and with the discovery of all these new subvariants and the metrics showing that it's really not moving yet because, or at all, we still don't know yet because of these subvariants. Do you think that we are beginning to do just that? That we are at that point wherein we are beginning to live with the virus, Dr. Lechon?
I think we're right now living with the virus. I was expecting a worst case scenario, given that we have two primary vaccines. But I think this could be attributed. My personal view is that because of the last quarter mega vaccination in December, we had around 15 million. And then we were affected by the Omicron surge last January. So we have two immunity, one from the vaccine and one from the
natural immunity.
Natural immunity around at that time, we were close to around 40,000. Mm-hmm. And this particular hybrid immunity has carried out this particular null number of cases. But let us not be complacent, because based on several studies, the waning immunity will be in about 3 to 6 months after the first booster. So we need to increase our layer of protection so that we can actually generate more gains for the economy. And of course, for the next administration, we can actually do this to, you know, metrics of success to finally ramp up the booster and then proceed to the implementation of universal healthcare. I think ending the pandemic on our end will make us a country that will be more resilient, more responsive, and of course can adjust to the economic demands of the next administration.
Because of all that you mentioned, Dr. Lechon, do you think it's still premature to talk about the lifting of the public health emergency? And if we do that now, how might that affect the emergency use authorization, for example, the vaccines that we're using?
Right. I think it's too early because the procurement of vaccines, particularly the ones, the third and the fourth dose, we know for, I mean, let's call a spade, the efficacy rate of the mRNA vaccines are actually, of course, better than the previous vaccines that we have ordered. And of course, once you are EUA, then we can have the latitude to order more vaccines. But in we can have several options. I don't want to remove the public health alert system, because this would affect the procurement of the vaccines for our country. But at the same time, let us look at other options. The other way, in terms of transition, is to make the mRNA vaccines, which are actually being shifted from EUA to full approval in the United States as early as August of last year. So that when we have the full approval, you can actually shift from the EUA so that we can commercialize it and make it available and more accessible to the private citizens, particularly the economic workforce, who will be the main drivers to speed up the economy. We know for a fact that even for 100 years, 1918 flu pandemic, we have, of course, free vaccination at the government level for the flu and pneumonia. But still, some of the private citizens would have to have the vaccination at the private clinics or the hospitals.
But here
so
you
I
have,
think by
but,
open...
Yeah, but Dr. Lechon, sorry to cut you there, but here you have a very unique situation where in the workforce, even when you lift the EUA and they're able to purchase on their own, the next problem is, will they have enough disposable income to actually purchase those vaccines for their protection, considering what has been happening to the economy, to their sources of income, not just because of the pandemic, but also because of what is happening in Ukraine and the invasion of Russia and how it has cascaded upon economies like the Philippines, Doctor?
Very good point. What I'm trying to say is that we need to plan for the future, because eventually, after 1 year of EUA, usually based on my experience and, of course, on the, right now, based on the experience of the U.S., after 1 year of their registration, they have shifted already to this particular mode of having it available so that a lot of people can have access to that. Because, you know, the bureaucratic system of the government cannot really, you know, deploy the vaccine, so that some business establishments who are willing to spend for the employees can actually do that. I'm not saying that at this point, Carmina, that we have to do that, but it has to be a work in progress. The other thing, Carmina, is that there should be a timeline for the government to complete the booster, because a goal with the timeline is just a dream. I mean, it should be done long time ago. After the mega vaccination, let's say in December, we could have actually boosted up the population in the next 3 months. But of course, this has been the problem, and that's the reason why we have expiring vaccines. So what I'm trying to say, in the next administration, the first 100 days, I think the marching orders for the Department of Health and all cabinet secretaries is to help the all employees, all people. It's not a mandate, but to redefine it to three doses and have the vaccines ready for everybody, so that in the next 100 days you have full vaccination, two primary and then a first booster, so that you can actually speed up on the other programs of the government. So that's my sentiment, Carmina.
All right. And a perfect way to wrap up this discussion, because I now want to talk about the next administration. Since you brought it up, we just heard from the Alliance of Health Workers detailing what they want to see in the next Secretary of Health. What about for you? You're a health reform advocate. You have been very vocal about improvements that must be done in the health sector. What are you looking for in the next chief of the department? What does the country need in the next health secretary?
I mean, the Department of Health for many years has been beset with a lot of problems. And basically, we need a Department of Health secretary, first and foremost, with the highest level of honesty and integrity, men and women with integrity. Because I think, you heard about the family issue, you heard about the PhilHealth 15 billion alleged anomaly, and the family is basically about honesty and forced governance. Number two is about competence, right man for the right job. Number three, a leader that will provide inspiration, and those with a forward-looking process, one with a vision of the future, and of course, one with moral courage that will not succumb to the pressures of the business as well as other interests. And of course, the personal interest should be set aside for the interests of the country.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Tony Lechon there, health reform advocate, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it. Take care. Keep safe.
Thank you, Carmina.
And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, evacuees allowed to go back to their homes days after Mount Bulusan's eruption. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The World Bank cuts its global growth forecast. It also slashed the Philippines' growth expectations this year, citing supply disruptions. And residents forced to evacuate due to the recent eruption of Mount Bulusan allowed to return home. Back with more news. Residents who were forced to evacuate due to the recent eruption of Mount Bulusan have been allowed to return home as conditions there improve. Our correspondent Jose Carretero now joins us with the latest. Jose, what else can you tell us?
Good afternoon, Carmina. Evacuees affected by Mount Bulusan in Sorsogon were already allowed to return home. At around 9 this morning, the recampment started, according to RV Londronio, the Municipal Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Officer of Cuban. Londronio said these residents are safe from the threat of the volcano since they are living outside the 4-kilometer permanent danger zone. Londronio adds they had to evacuate these residents last Sunday due to the thick ash that covered the entire village of Puting Sapa. But since alert level 1 still hoisted over Bulusan, the MBRMO is still on alert. Should there be another phreatic eruption, Londronio says they can easily mobilize evacuation since they have the logistics and personnel on standby. Before the evacuees were sent home, they were given food packs from the SWD with 10 kilos of rice, canned goods, milk, and coffee. Meanwhile, alert level 1 is still up over Mount Bulusan. For the past 24 hours, people recorded 11 volcanic quakes, while the sulfur dioxide emission was measured at 1,241 tons per day. Residents are advised not to enter the 4-kilometer permanent danger zone. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Jose Carretero, there joining us on the line. Take care, Jose. Keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. set to attend the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, summit in Thailand this November. The Marcos camp said he was personally invited by Thai Chargé d'Affaires Tawat Sumitmo. The high-level regional event will be held face-to-face for the first time since the pandemic struck. It will be held from November 18 to 19 in Bangkok. The campaign team of President-elect Marcos says it spent over 600 million pesos to promote his candidacy, but it claims none of it came out of his own pockets. The details from Willard Chang.
Before the deadline on Wednesday, a number of presidential candidates have filed their statements of contribution and expenditures, or SOCE, with the Campaign Finance Office of the Commission on Elections. According to a list from COMELEC, the first to file was Senator Panfilo Lacson, followed by Jose Montemayor, Vice President Lenny Robredo, Senator Manny Pacquiao, and President-elect Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos. Though not on the COMELEC list, Manila Mayor Isko Moreno Domagoso says he has filed his SOCE and will make it public on Wednesday. Marcos declared receiving contributions worth 624.68 million pesos. Consisting of cash contributions worth 373.25 million pesos and in-kind contributions worth 4.2 million pesos from other sources. And from his political party, zero cash but 247.23 million pesos worth of in-kind contributions. Marcos declared spending a total of 623.2 million pesos for his campaign, with 371.7 million paid out of cash contributions and in-kind contributions worth 251.4 million. Marcos declared no personal funds were used. Marcos's declared expenditures is within the 674 million peso campaign spending limit for presidential and vice presidential candidates. The amount is based on the authorized expense of 10 pesos per voter for those running for the country's top two posts. There were more than 67.4 million registered voters in the 2022 elections. As of Tuesday, only Dr. Willie Ong has filed among the vice presidential candidates and 8 among the senatorial candidates. According to the list released by the COMELEC Finance Office, more than 30 party-list groups have filed SOCEs and 3 political parties. The DILG reminded candidates, winners will not be allowed to assume office if they fail to file their SOCEs. Candidates who fail to do so may be fined, while those who commit a second or subsequent offense may be perpetually disqualified from holding public office. Willard Cheng, ABS-CBN News.
Meanwhile, Manila Mayor Isko Moreno has also submitted his SOCE. The losing presidential candidate spent over 242 million pesos for his campaign, but he only used 1.1 million pesos from his personal finances as most of the funds were donated. Vice President-elect Sara Duterte Carpio spent 216 million pesos for her campaign. All her expenses were covered by contributions. Over 136 million pesos came from her political party, while over 79 million was donated by other sources. The COMELEC's Campaign Finance Office will receive only until today, Wednesday, all the statement of contributions and expenditures of candidates in the recent polls. Germany's ambassador underscores the importance of human rights and the rule of law during a meeting with President-elect Marcos. And as Inara Formina tells us, Marcos also met with envoys from Spain and Morocco.
Another batch of ambassadors pay their courtesy visits to President-elect Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. Tuesday. Spanish Ambassador Jorge Moragas, German Ambassador Ankaray Fishtul, and Moroccan Ambassador Ride Alfasi met Marcos separately at his headquarters in Mandaluyong City. Speaking to journalists, Ambassador Ray Fishtul said the meeting with Marcos centered on exploring how to further cooperation between the Philippines and Germany in terms of common bilateral interests.
I informed him that so far Germany has provided 25 million euro for climate change-related projects in bilateral projects, and that the Philippines is also engaged in regional projects with additional funding on top of these 25 million euro.
Among the topics discussed in their meeting, food security, which is one of the top priorities of the incoming Marcos administration.
We also exchanged about the priority of President-elect Marcos with regard to food security, and I informed him about the upcoming international ministerial conference on global food security. This also against the background of the impact of the Russian war against Ukraine with regard to the global food security and the challenges on global food security.
She adds continuing trade relations between the two countries was also discussed.
Germany being the largest trade and business partner among the EU member states for the Philippines, and we saw a lot of interest on both sides to further explore on this issue, specifically mentioned we discussed the renewable energy sectors, where Germany is having a very strong expertise and engagement.
Reifestuhl said among the highlights of the call were discussions on a mutual commitment to uphold the rule of law and human rights and maritime security cooperation.
I also underlined the importance Germany attaches to rule of law and safeguarding human rights, and assured him of our continued commitment in this regard. In this context, I also mentioned the German support, contribution and funding of the United Nations Joint Program on Human Rights here in the Philippines.
The official visit of the German, Spanish and Moroccan heads of station came on the heels of courtesy visits Monday by ASEAN ambassadors and the Italian ambassador to the Philippines. Ina Reformina, ABS-CBN News.
We're going to take another break. Still ahead, Hollywood actor Matthew McConaughey issues an emotionally charged appeal for gun control measures in the U.S. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. News. Singapore facing a dengue emergency as it grapples with an outbreak of the seasonal disease. Singapore has so far recorded over 11,000 dengue cases since the start of the year. That number exceeds the over 5,000 reported in 2021. The unusually early peak, which typically comes in June, is attributed to climate change. Experts now warn this trend could be seen worldwide. Here in the Philippines, the number of dengue cases in three provinces in Region 2 have exceeded the epidemic threshold. These provinces are Cagayan, Isabela, Nueva Vizcaya. The health department has provided additional funds to its regional offices for dengue outbreak response. The brutal street fighting continues in Ukraine's east, particularly in the cities of Severodonetsk and Lysychansk, where Kyiv's forces have managed to regain territory. Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky says they will fight to recover all their territory occupied by Russian forces. Responding to suggestions that Ukraine must cede territory to Russia, Zelensky says they have already lost too many people to simply allow that. He admits, though, his troops are struggling to hold their ground as he reiterates a plea for more foreign help in the war. Meanwhile, pro-Kremlin separatists in Ukraine confirmed the death of another Russian general. His death, though, has not been confirmed by officials in Moscow. Ukraine's forces claim to have killed around a dozen Russian generals, but Moscow media have confirmed only a few deaths among the top brass. Russia says two major Ukrainian ports on the Sea of Azov are ready to resume grain shipments. But the Kremlin notes Kyiv will have to demine the roads leading to the ports. Ukraine and the West accuse Russia of weaponizing food supplies. But Moscow blames the situation on Ukrainian mines and on international sanctions against its economy. Russia has seized large parts of Ukraine's coast, blocking farm exports and driving up the price of grain. A show of force by the U.S. and South Korea fighter jets from the South Korean and U.S. Air Forces conducted a joint formation exercises over Seoul's Western Sea. This amid mounting tensions on the Korean Peninsula following missile launches by North Korea. It prompted fears Pyongyang is preparing for a test of nuclear device. Sources said the joint formation exercises were meant to show the ability of Washington and Seoul to respond quickly to North Korea's provocations. The Philippine Navy deploying one of its battleships to the U.S.-led maritime exercise known as the Rim of the Pacific Exercise 2022. Our very own Bianca Dava now joins us with details. Bianca, over to you.
Hi, Carmina. The Philippines is deploying a contingent to participate in the upcoming Rim of the Pacific or RIMPAC exercise, the world's largest maritime warfare exercise hosted by the United States. The Philippine Navy is sending one of its two guided missile frigates, the BRP Antonio Luna, to the RIMPAC exercise 2022, which will take place in Hawaii from June 29 to August 4. In a send-off ceremony this morning, the BRP Antonio Luna, which is part of the Naval Task Group 80.5, sailed today from the Naval Operating Base here in Subic, Zambales. Flag Officer of the Philippine Navy, Vice Admiral Adelius Bordado, served as the presiding officer for the send-off ceremony. Bordado said the 140 Navy personnel aboard BRP Antonio Luna will help maintain and enhance the Navy's pursuit of maritime collaboration with its counterparts through this exercise. Among the trainees or the trainings expected during the exercise include amphibious operations, air defense exercises, counter-piracy operations, mine clearance operations, and diving and salvage operations. This is the third time the Philippine Navy will participate in the U.S. Navy-led multinational exercise held by EMILY to promote regional stability in the Pacific region. In the RIMPAC 2018, the Navy deployed the offshore patrol vessel BRP Andres Bonifacio, while in 2020, the country's first missile frigate, the BRP Jose Rizal, was sent. This year's iteration includes 26 participating nations and an estimated 25,000 personnel. Bordado said the Philippine contingent will arrive in Hawaii on June 25 after making a short stop in Guam. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Bianca Dava. Back here in the newsroom, Hollywood actor Matthew McConaughey takes the podium at the White House to deliver an emotional appeal for gun responsibility. That's following the massacre at an elementary school in his hometown of Uvalde, Texas. McConaughey, who has met with families of the victims, spoke about the 19 children who died. He says gun responsibility should be something everyone can agree on, despite deep divisions in the country.
When we arrived a few hours later, I got to tell you, even from the inside of our vehicle, you could feel the shock in the town. You could feel the pain, the denial, the disillusion, anger, blame, sadness, loss of lives, dreams halted. As I said, this moment is different. We are in a window of opportunity right now that we have not been in before. A window where it seems like real change can happen.
U.S. gun violence has killed more than 18,000 people so far in 2022. It's now the leading cause of death for American children. Before we go, the very first center for exorcism in Asia will soon rise in the Philippines. The director of the Archdiocese of Manila's Office of Exorcism says construction has already begun in Makati City after the groundbreaking ceremony held last May 17th. More on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. That'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the news channel.